Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Peter Winnick. I'm the founder and CEO of Thought Leadership Leverage, and you're joining us on the podcast, which is Leveraging Thought Leadership. Today, we've got a first. I've got two guests at once. I've got Richard Citrin and Michael Couch, who are co-authors of Strategy-Driven Leadership. They've also each done lots of other impressive things in sort of the leadership space, corporate space, coaching, consulting, speaking. We'll get to all that sort of fun stuff, but the current common thread between the two is they wrote a book together, and it is rare that, how long is the book out now? Several months?
Yes.
So one of the things in, so one of the things in my experience is it's quite rare that 3 or 4 or 6 months after a book is out, the co-authors will agree to come on together and still be friends. So that's always nice to see. So welcome aboard, guys.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Cool. So first, let's talk about the book from the standpoint of, at some point, the two of you had the light bulb moment and said, let's write this book. And then you had to make some decisions around how to write it and who to publish it with. And then you wrote it. So just let's talk about that for a little bit. How did it come to be? And then some of the decisions that you made.
I guess I've caused it all. This is Michael. I had a book in mind for a while, but and had written, you know, chunks of it, but I was sort of struggling with, you know, how to make it the way I wanted to. And then Richard and I started working together on projects specifically related to leadership. And we really uncovered some things and found out that matching up our background and experience was very beneficial for our clients. It worked out very well for us. And so that's where the idea of, well, heck, let's do a book together. And at the time I was focusing on very broad strategic mm-hmm. talent management, mm-hmm. organization development, and we really narrowed and honed in on leadership.
So I want to ask you this, Michael, when you say you were working together, so you were working not on, it wasn't you're sitting around with a glass of Pinot saying, oh, let's write a book. You're actually doing client work together, got to understand that you're sort of on the same page with certain things, you enjoy the collaboration, the way each other thinks, et cetera. And then from there, the book came sort of as the second thing to do together.
Exactly. There was Pinot Noir involved, but we were working together and wrote some things together, presented together, and then the idea for the book came from there, from the content.
Cool. So then you decide to do it, and then there's a whole bunch of tactical things. Who's going to be our publisher? How are we going to write this? How are we going to distribute it? So give us maybe, Richard, a little bit of a summary of some of the decisions, because you've written, is this your first book, Michael?
First book, yes.
Okay. So, and Richard, you've written books before, so.
My third book, and this is actually a very interesting story, Peter, so we've been doing all this work together for really, you know, 7 or 8 years. And then in 2018, you know, I kind of pushed Michael to say, let's go ahead and write a book. Let's just take 2018 to write the book, and we'll see what comes out of it. We'll self-publish it if we need to, and then we'll have something to
work. Sure.
So, you know, we weren't under any great pressure. We divided chapters. We wrote things. We shared ideas. We modified and reviewed.
I want to pause you there, though, for a minute, Richard, because you've been around the book block before. So I think, but I want to hear it from you, the let's write this and then we can always self-publish as opposed to let's go out and pitch it. And now we've got sort of the proverbial gun to our head that says draft one is due. Was that part of the logic underneath that?
I think that was part of the logic was not to put ourselves under pressure. Let's just get the material out there because we felt we had some very novel concepts. And by putting, you know, by not pressuring ourselves, we go ahead, right? We had 50,000 words and we took it to the woman here locally in Pittsburgh who was going to publish it for us. Mm-hmm. She read it and she said, you guys have some great intellectual property, some great thought leadership. You should definitely think about commercially publishing it. That was November of 2018.
Okay.
It took a couple of months to write a book proposal.
Okay.
Sent it off the first week in January. And by the end of January, we had sent it off to 6 publishers. By the end of January, 3 of them wanted it.
Great. And then when you say publishers, traditional publishers.
Traditional publishers, right.
Okay. And there are some, so let's stay here for a minute. There are misconceptions and misunderstandings around self-publishing, traditional publishers, et cetera. So to me, there's two primary pieces. There's sort of the branding, logistics, distribution. There's the stuff that they do. And then there's also the business model. So touch on both of those, if you will, and why you made that choice.
Go ahead, Richard.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the business model of publishing these days is, you know, unless you're Stephen King, You know, you're grateful they're going to publish the book, they're going to promote the book, and they're going to help you get the book out there. But, you know, we weren't looking for an advance or anything of that sort. We were looking for a high-quality publisher, which we got in Taylor & Francis, who would, you know, promote the book for us, give us that publisher reputation, and allow us to leverage their publishing capability for other activities like speaking at conventions and conferences, doing podcasts, and any the other kinds of things that we hope they would do. And I think that over, you know, I think there's less of a chasm now between self-publishing and traditional publishers. But still, you know, traditional publishing is still the gold standard of getting your material out there, because you have somebody else who's in the publishing business who's reading your material, and that provides a tremendous validation when we got those letters or emails back from those folks saying, hey, we like what you guys have, we want to publish it.
Well, I would argue for a moment, yes, that there is some sort of third-party validation that what your work is good, right? Because you guys can say that to each other, right? You can be high on your own fumes or something, right? Sure. But when the pros, if you will, say that, that's one thing. I would say that I've experienced on behalf of clients a couple of times where there's the flip side of that is a lack of alignment, right? So they've got 40 books to publish this season. You're not publishing 40 books this season, right? This book is far more important to you than it is to them. And the business model is, listen, they get paid number of units of books times a profit margin per book. You couldn't care less about that. You have a secondary monetization channel. So that overlap of alignment, I think it's just inherently a tense relationship between the author and the publisher. So how did you guys navigate that?
Yeah. I think in this case, having the luxury of several publishers interested, we were able to look at what their approach, talk with some others who had published with them. Mm-hmm. You know, Richard had some connections there, and found some very quick alignment. We had heard horror stories about what it's going to be like to work for a publisher and an editor. Quite the opposite in our case. I found it to be a great learning experience. Learned a lot, you know. And I think a big benefit is that we had pretty much had the book done. We were just pitching an idea. But that their help even since then in terms of ideas around marketing the book and providing material, sure, that has been very supportive. So I felt a pretty quick alignment. Same thing for you, Richard?
Yeah, it was, I think. And I think the other piece is that when you have a book that's been written and is getting published, you're beginning to think about your next publication. You know, if that's a direction you want to take. And I think, you know, Michael and I still have ideas on where we want to take this leadership model. So I think in that regard, you want to find a way, you want to be working with somebody who is high quality and can help you. And even things, as I mentioned, you know, they pitch, they go to a lot of conferences and conventions where they set up their materials in the exhibition hall.
Sure.
And we're going to the same conventions and pitching presentations and breakout sessions and keynotes.
That's a nice piece. So, if you're enjoying this episode of Leveraging Thought Leadership, please make sure to subscribe. If you'd like to help spread the word about our podcast, please leave us a review and share it with your friends. We're available on Apple Podcasts and on all major listening apps, as well as at thoughtleadershipleverage.com/podcasts. If someone's out there listening and they're in that process, so one is I want to be clear. You basically had almost, quote, finished product. I'm sure they did some touch-up editorial and all that sort of stuff. But let's say, for argument's sake, you're at the 90th percentile or something, right? So that's different than proposal, and then you have to fulfill that proposal. Because that's where a lot of the tension comes of, oh, I had a different vision, and then we argue about this. And so you alleviated some of that. But if somebody's out there today and they're shopping publishers, be that self or be that traditional, what are two or three questions you would suggest that they might ask of the publisher to see if it's the right fit for them?
Certainly the most important thing is around the marketing and sales support that you get. You know, with the books that I've written most recently, the editorial support is minimal. They're going to have a copy editor read it, but it's not as if they're going to have, at least in my experience, they're not going to have an editor who's going to go through and say, you know, this paragraph doesn't quite match up with something you said in chapter 2. Can you clarify that? I mean, they're not... That's not the experience of the editors that I've worked with on the few books I've worked with.
So what you're saying is it's not really a sparring partner from an IP perspective, it's, oh, does that should be a comma or a typo or, that sentence a little long or that kind of thing.
Yeah, you'll certainly get those corrections, but it's not going to be, they're not going to challenge your thought leadership.
Yeah.
Or your company, which is good. I mean, now, obviously, if we had a bigger brand, if we were writing books like Marshall Goldsmith, maybe there, well, they probably don't challenge Marshall Goldsmith for that matter. they may push back and say, this is a great concept. We think this idea might work a little better for the market that we're used to. Mm-hmm. So I think, but certainly from our perspective, having the marketing and business support was important.
And I think we also had the opportunity to speak with our assigned publisher editor, before we signed anything. And that was very beneficial just to, talk to them, get their understanding of this whole space. And immediately our editor provided, or our publisher provided content by suggestion, several different title options, mm-hmm. and helping direct for that. So, I mean, getting that feel right away that they're in it to work with you as a partner, I think was the other good feel for us. And it became obvious in the questioning and the upfront work. And then just some basic their guidance into how they're going to handle indexing, how are they going to handle, mm-hmm.
The block and tackle,
the block stuff. And tackling. Yeah. Somebody yeah. who can provide you, and this editor also had, our publisher had a full set of resources that we can go and look at and understand before we dove into it. So very helpful.
Okay, so now fast forward, magic happens, the book is out, right? And given that your goal wasn't, you didn't come from the delusional camp of then the book will come out and, royalties will come pouring in and what color Ferrari is my biggest
question, right? Yeah, there's only one color Ferrari.
Yeah, well, it was a trick question.
Right? Yeah.
But what were your goals and expectations? And where I'm going with this is I find a lot of people early on or when they're putting a book out, they're so focused, as they should be, on creating great content that they don't pause and have that sort of strategic perspective of, here's what I'm trying to achieve with this book. Yes, I want to produce something I'm proud of. Yes, I want to produce something that shows our thinking, but these are the doors I want opened, or I want to book this much net new clients that generate this revenue. Where is your head around those things?
Well, I think this is where Richard and I were good partners, because I have to say I got stuck in the academics and the content of the book, the baby. Mm-hmm. Richard and through the exposure through the network, like with you and others, mm-hmm. brought the sense of, well, wait a minute, what beyond this, and how can we leverage it for so that we can eat and have our glasses of Pinot Noir. So I think that was I could spend time and focus on the content as needed, how that plays out. Richard can be thinking forward more, and also had a much better feel for idea for how we're gonna, the first 6 months and our launch plan, and got us connected with some folks to even think about and help on the launch and how we want to leverage it.
So what can you share some of those goals were?
Yeah, I think, I think the primary, I think, let me just back up to make one other comment, which is the work that we're doing is not going to change the world. So you want to make sure you have it in a good and a proper content. And I think sometimes people, when they write a book, they get so much ownership around their ideas and believe that they can change the world with it, that then they get hung up on the, kind of that kind of academic goal. And can get frustrated when others don't see the book in the same light that you do. And, for example, one of the things that, you talk about one of the goals that people have, one of the goals that I have is for people to buy the book.
That's a goal.
You would be amazed at how many people have, who I've shared about the book, they have said to me, well, can you send me a copy? And I want to say, well, would you be willing to buy a copy? It costs me almost as much to send you a copy as it would be for you to buy a copy. If I have to send it to 100 people, that becomes expensive to me. So people don't necessarily want to buy books. The second big goal that I had is I want people to read the book.
Ah, so I wanted to go there because I was just talking to someone recently and it was a bit depressing. So I know how hard it is to sell a book. I know the average business book doesn't sell 1,000, 2,000. Like, I know all that stuff, right? Then this person got some new data from Amazon that said the average business book that you finally sell, your 5 or 7 or whatever 1,000 copies of your 242 page book, the average reader gets to page 18. So I was like, oh.
Yeah, so what we did, we did send copies of the book out to 50 or whatever different
companies
in our field, friends and colleagues, clients. And what we did was we had a couple of promotional pieces in there, and we wrote personalized notes.
Yep.
In the personalized notes, and it varied from person to person, I would say, or Michael would say, I would suggest you read, if you'd be willing, read chapters 3 and 5. I think that has particular relevance to your business, and you find those very interesting.
Now, did you just tell everyone to read 3 and 5 so it looked like you made a note?
Some people it was some people it was just chapter 4. There was one person I said, just read the first chapter. That would be great. I think that became a bit of a theme in terms of that. I think beyond that, it was clearly around more of a marketing component to the work. Michael and I did a very thorough update of the view of current and prospective clients we've worked with.
Asked
a spreadsheet of 150 or so different clients and how we wanted to approach them with the book and the ideas that are in the book.
So you said, one of the goals was to sell books. Were there other goals in terms of getting into different markets, getting bigger engagements, tell us about the goals as it relates to the impact on the business? Because, authorship as a business model is a pretty awful business model if you like to eat.
Yeah. Well, I think we sold out of our first run of books. The royalties are just pouring in. but I think they printed maybe 50 copies or something. Pardon me?
It was more than 50 copies.
It was more than 50. Yes, it was. I'm just joking. But the other thing was just to get the exposure, get our name out there. So the other thing that the book immediately did is being able to propose that we speak.
Talk about that. Yeah.
And we both have our own sort of networks that we could leverage, but now it opens the doors to new networks. So professional associations, verticals that we may not have been involved with before. And the book is a great door opener for that, because not only can you come and speak, but you could have a book signing or the cachet that comes with you as an author. I felt that difference right away over the many years where I was out, on the speaking circuit. So I think that exposure, that additional gravity that you generate. Yeah.
Yeah. An interesting story that I would share about this. And I think you get more credibility from people who don't know you than people who do know you.
Your friends know better.
Yeah, they do.
Kind of know your brand and know what you're about. And a friend of mine invited me to go out to California. He was doing some work near San Jose, and he invited me to go out and meet with some of his clients because he knew this book was coming out. Mm-hmm. I went with 3 or 4 of his clients. We had nice meetings. And one person in particular, you go out for a business meeting, you say, tell me about your business. And I like to talk with you. And he says, no, I want to hear your pitch. So I said, I usually don't pitch. I'm usually more of a catcher. I'd like to hear what your needs are. He says, no, tell me what your pitch is. So I walk him through the book, an hour. He says, I just have an hour I'm going to give you. And I thank him after we're all done, and he thanks me, nothing else is said. 3 days later, he sends me an email. He says, I loved what you had to say. Please send me a proposal based on our conversation.
So that's a win. That's great.
I was blown away.
Yeah. And not only that, he said it was almost, I don't have the money, but I'm going to get it. I think, which was a nice effort on Richard's part. And then he and his team read the book. When they came to our first session, they had questions, markers, highlighting, and that was again from the guidance of, not only, here's the idea, but when you get want to work on this, here's the sections to read that are going to fit exactly to what we're doing. And then, off we go from there.
That's great. Great. All right. So as we start to wrap, any final words of wisdom or traps to avoid, or what else could we learn from your experience? Because it's gone well. Right, you guys are still talking. You had a great book.
Yeah.
Things are happening.
I think, from the co-author perspective, working with people who you like, so Michael and I have a good friendship. Our wives, we get together, the four of us, we enjoy each other. Mike and I are very complementary one another. So where he's strong, I'm weak. Where I'm strong, he's weak. Well, they're probably not weak. He's good.
No, weak.
He's good.
There's a work styles level, too.
Well together. And I think for somebody who's going to do work together, that's important. I think the other piece around your work and thought leadership, Peter, is that if you have an idea, go with it. Don't think somebody else, I thought, man, other people are doing leadership books, This book really has a unique approach that's really, really helpful for organizations. And if you have an idea, build it and let it grow, and you'll be amazed at where it can potentially take you.
Well, and to that point, I think for some, one of the benefits, either intended or a secondary benefit of writing a book, is it's a forcing mechanism to get you to crystallize your thinking in a tight and clear way. So, you know, the curse of the expert is you can get in the room and do stuff with this, but it has to be clear and concise and comprehensible in a book. So somebody can pick it up for $25, open it up and go, aha, I get it. And that's not so easy.
No, and I think that's one of the biggest things I learned out of the process, of just how beneficial the process and going through it was, and having good feedback and be willing to take it. Yeah, and I think learn from it, particularly Richard or our book coach or from the editor. You got to listen, and it snaps you out of your thinking and actually ends up adding to your perspective and to your thought leadership. So the thought leadership continues. We keep adding to it, and that's maybe where the next book is going to come from.
Cool.
But that was a great learning for me.
Well, this has been great. I appreciate your time. I appreciate you sharing your story and your journey with us, and I wish you all the best.
Yeah, thank you, Peter. Great being here.
Thanks, guys.
To learn more about Thought Leadership Leverage, please visit our website at thoughtleadershipleverage.com. To reach me directly, feel free to email me at peter@thoughtleadershipleverage.com. And please subscribe to Leveraging Thought Leadership on iTunes or your favorite podcast app to get your weekly episode automatically.